Both an art and a science, valuations are complex things and their impact is enormous, making the difference between generational wealth creation and a comfortable retirement. At Bizval, we know how tough it is to grow and run a business, which is exactly why we've made valuations simpler. Whether you are using our online tool Bizval Live or reaching out to us for a concierge offering, where we spend more time on your numbers and your business and give you detailed feedback, you can be sure that the same techniques being used by professional investors are also being used by us. And with Bizval Bootcamp, we will prepare you for those discussions with investors. Welcome to this episode of the Bizval Podcast. I'm here with our guest today, Shay Stockdale. He's the head of advisory at Iridium Business Solutions. Shay, I'm really looking forward to this chat. We had a bit of a discussion off air, I suppose. You're a little bit of a UK trail accent there, although you've been in South Africa for, I think you said, 16 years. But of course, I asked you the most important question, which was you support when they play each other at rugby. That's the biggest nationality test around. And the answer was?
Definitely the Springboks, eh? Definitely.
There we go. So we can carry on with this podcast. You are allowed to to be on the Bizval show. No, I'm just kidding. But obviously, thanks for your time today. And just excited to tap into your knowledge, understand a little bit more about your role at Iridium. And also just the sort of activity you're seeing amongst your clients, how they're scaling, all the kind of usual stuff. So thanks for your time today.
Cool. Thanks very much for having me.
So I think, Shay, before we get into any of the details, it's always nice for people to know who they're listening to. Do you want to just give us the 2-minute summary of, you know, how you ended up at Iridium and what you currently do there?
I guess I've worked at Iridium coming on 7 years. I started as a trainee and I worked myself into being a shareholder and a director. And I now head up our advisory space in which we provide fractional senior financial skills. So essentially fractional CFO services, fractional financial management services, and FP&A. And yeah, that's pretty much my background.
So fractional services basically just means you get a CFO quality person, but you're only paying for a portion of their time, I would imagine.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense for businesses that are scaling and doing everything else. But before we get into more about your client base, I think what's interesting is your role at Iridium, you know, as we understand it, I suppose, from the outside looking in. It's not necessarily to be the face of the business. It's very much involved in the engine room on that side. And of course, that's an incredibly important role. And I guess the question to you is, you know, based on your experience in that role within Iridium, as founders think about how to scale their businesses, because founders are often the face of a business, right? You know, as they think about scale and as they think about what sort of people to bring in, you know, what have you learned from your time running an engine room type environment rather than the face of the business? And what are those lessons that you think founders can take from that?
So I found that working with founder teams in various different businesses, really good founder teams have the executor, the ops guy, the guy who actually does the delivery piece of the work. And it's not a necessarily a glorious position, but it kind of filters into everything. So if you've got a good framework for delivering your product or your service, that filters into making, say, networking, sales, everything else easier. So behind the scenes on a lot of founder teams, there is that ops person. They're just not the networker. They're not out there in the market creating value, trying to unlock value and create opportunities for the business, which is very much the face or the roles of the face of the founders, if that makes sense, to unlock opportunities in the market. So in terms of the engine side, looking at, say, my work at Iridium, I've been very much focused on team management and delivery and making sure our service is good. And a nice part of that process is that you're very much focusing on how you do what you do. And it links well into aligning for, say, if you want to be a value-driven business, one of the key elements to that is aligning your standard operating position procedures with your values. So you become the enforcer or reinforce those values in how you actually operate as well. So it's an important piece of essentially the business, and is, in my experience when looking at founder teams and the businesses I've worked with, there's always a good ops person behind the scenes. And pretty much what I have to say about that piece.
Yeah, sorry to use another rugby analogy, but I think that that's, we can learn a lot from sport actually into businesses as well. You know, people have different positions to play. And I suppose in rugby, the sort of swashbuckling backline player with the great hair, you know, is very different to the guy doing the really hard work on the ground, you know, trying to get the ball, but you need both. And those operational people who are doing the really hard yards, often behind the scenes, without them, the whole show falls over very quickly. So I think founders, generally, I think people are are very switched on to the sort of great salesperson. They're often very charismatic and they get out there, they bring the deals in. You know, the unsung hero, I think, is very much on the operational side. And at the end of the day, you need both. I don't think you can have one without the other, right?
No, exactly. You definitely need both. And I think, you know, there's definitely value in terms of going out there and building a market around and unlocking opportunities like the face of the business. And, you know, typically you're meeting other founders who are the face of their businesses. So they want to create an ecosystem and they want to create value in that ecosystem. So there's definitely value to both. But yeah, I think ops does play definitely a core part.
Absolutely. So I think let's move on to just something that founders tend to underestimate, which is the regulatory environment, not just in South Africa, but I think as they scale into other territories as well. You know, unfortunately, this is the real nuts and bolts stuff where you can have a great product or a great service, but if you don't get the basics right, the wheels are going to fall off the car. You know, in your experience, where do the difficulties start to come in for founders who are on this journey?
So my experience, guys don't do their due diligence and their homework properly in the countries that they want to invest in. So they don't understand essentially the discrepancies or differences between their home country and the country that they're investing in. They don't have a clear understanding of timelines and deliveries on the cost of regulatory compliance. So essentially the cost of taxes and the cost of labor, because there's a whole load of regulatory cost for labor. So they don't do the due diligence and understand the timeline of what the costs are in a given year. But then the second kind of part of that is a lot of businesses don't first build a market in a foreign country first. They first want to establish a cost center or an infrastructure in that country. So they kind of do almost have a reversed approach. And now by investing and not doing the due diligence and understanding your market and understanding whether there is a market for your services or products, and also unpacking, say, whether there's cultural similarities in terms of your home country and the country you're investing in, and whether you will be able to gain traction in that space, you're almost in a deficit before you start, you know, making money, because you've invested in infrastructure there. So, and that kind of plays back into the, you know, just investing overseas in terms of expanding your business. But definitely in terms of kind of the regulatory framework is just not doing your proper homework and understanding the costs associated with compliance in that country, and just assuming that it's similar to your home country. That's a big mistake.
Yeah, so very nice practical advice there. I like it. So moving on a bit, I think the word scale kind of gets thrown around a lot, actually. I mean, we see it all the time, right? And scale means different things to different people. Obviously, in its purest form, it talks to size. But I think it is a little bit more nuanced than that when it comes to entrepreneurship, and specifically founders who are looking to build something way beyond just self-employment. And that's obviously where scale starts to become the sort of narrative. What does it mean to you? Is this a measure of revenue? Is it the number of people in your office? Is it a mindset of the founder? What is scale in your world?
So for Iridium, we've got a bag goal which is centered around people. So our scale is very much around kind of how many people we can impact. And it comes through from our employment stats, the employment stats of our clients, and number of clients we service. So that is how we're kind of measuring our scale. In terms of a business, I think scale really needs to speak to wanted outcome of the business owners. So what are they trying to actually achieve? And when I look at it, there's kind of four measures really to go into business, is to kind of reclaim time at a later stage, deliver impact, make a profit, or do something you're passionate about. And those are kind of your four core areas of focus for going into business. And you need to really be aligned on the long-term plan with those four areas. But in some businesses and business models, if your business model can be pretty much dictated by the industry, so scale for a tech startup can be very dictated by VCs and what they want to see in terms of scale, which is very much revenue go from being able to sell out at a later stage from their initial seed funding rounds. So yes, scale should align to wanted outcome, but sometimes depending on what business you're going into, it's going to be mandated by the industry and by where you need to raise funds and what parties you need to get involved in.
Yeah, that's another really good practical answer, because you're 100% right. It does depend on how your business is funded, what other parties are involved. If you do have VC on your cap table or your shareholder register, it makes a significant difference. I think for me, scale, or at least the journey of scale, it is a mindset thing. It's very much a founder who's made that decision of saying, okay, I'm not going to be just self-employment. I'm going to really go for gold here and see if I can create something that is actually has a life just beyond me, basically. And it's incredibly difficult, right? It's hard enough to actually come up with a business that works, you know, with the founder's involvement, because the founder inevitably has a special set of talents that make the thing work. To try and then make it work without the founder's involvement is just a whole nother level. And that's why so few businesses are actually sellable, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's those initial years, having the grit to get through those initial years and build a team that you can trust that can kind of execute in its various areas, that's really hard.
Absolutely. So I want to move on to a little bit about your clients and some of the activity that you may be seeing in that space. You know, obviously South Africa, not an easy place to do business. Our audience for this podcast is global. And, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar with a term like load shedding, it means that South Africa is without electricity for several hours of the day from our national grid. Unfortunately, I wish I was joking, but I'm not. Obviously, that also breeds a lot of resilience and innovation into entrepreneurs, right? This is not an easy place to make money. We don't have this beautiful capital raising ecosystem like in the US, for example. I would say we don't have supportive policies from government. We certainly don't have a supportive infrastructure for this. And yet you do see people managing to build businesses at work. So I think that does talk to the strength of South Africans. I'm obviously a very proud South African, so I suppose I'm biased. But, you know, from your perspective, the business models that are kind of working in South Africa at the moment, what are you seeing amongst your clients in terms of activity, things that are going quite well, and then maybe also some of the stuff that's having a tough time at the moment?
Yeah, I can definitely agree with your points in terms of South African entrepreneurs are extremely resilient. Yeah, they've got a lot of grit and a lot of drive to make their businesses work. In terms of looking at kind of where businesses are doing well at the moment, the solar industry is doing incredibly well off the back of the regulatory changes due to load shedding. So off the back of a problem, we've created an opportunity, and that space is growing and thriving. Another area...
What's that old saying? Hey, never waste a good crisis.
Yep, exactly, yeah. So another space that is... it's always been there, but it's, I think, off the back of COVID, remote working, there's a bit of a pivot in this space is outsourced processing from Europe, UK, US, similarly culturally aligned and time zoned aligned regions like Europe and UK are perfect for kind of almost getting an arbitrage opportunity with labor costs. So in South Africa, we're well positioned for that opportunity, and a lot of businesses have taken full advantage of that, with outsourcing, say, finance teams here, or outsourcing, you know, virtual PAs here, just making use of kind of the skill set in South Africa to service the UK or Europe market. I think guys who are struggling at the moment, in terms of struggling, are businesses that are servicing corporate contracts. So a lot of corporates in South Africa have done budget cuts coming up to this year and for the new year, and that can be a number of reasons why, but that has a knock-on effect to the SMEs actually servicing those contracts. So I've seen it coming up with the renewal of new budgets for the year ahead, and there've just been a number of budget cuts across the board with corporates, and that's affecting the SME space servicing those contracts.
I just want to touch on that point you make about business process outsourcing. So I've been hearing a lot of that, and obviously I track a lot of the listed company results as well, and something that has come through quite strongly from the property funds is that a lot of office space right now in Cape Town is being taken up by these outsourced back office type businesses servicing Europe. So I think Cape Town in particular is very well positioned, obviously, for this. I mean, it's a lovely place to live. I'm lucky enough to live in Cape Town, and it's a good place to build an outsourced business, right? You know, it's an attractive place for an international workforce and local. And that labor cost arbitrage is a big deal. You know, South Africans can hold a great conversation on the phone. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but our accent's not that difficult to understand in Europe. It's the same time zone, you know, we can give proper back office support. And we have a really strong skill set in South Africa of professionals. Our chartered accountants, just one example, are world class. You know, that's just one example. We have brilliant tech people. You know, Amazon Web Services, you know, that incubation in many ways is a South African story. So yeah, it's a very, very interesting positioning. It also shows you that countries need to focus on what they are globally competitive in, right? I mean, we're getting into like trade finance here and tariffs and everything else, which is way beyond the scope of this podcast. But the point is, focus on what you're good at. I mean, it's the same as a founder, right? Don't go and try and be something you're not. If you're great with numbers, don't go and start a business in art. It's not going to work.
I fully agree. And I mean, I'm looking to kind of take advantage of, you know, that financial skill sets, because they said chartered accountants are world class here, but there's an opportunity overseas for unlocking higher rates. And you look at the UK and the US, there's an exodus of senior financial resources in the market because they don't have the work-life balance, they haven't got, and they're struggling to demonstrate value. I think overall in finance, there is an issue around demonstrating value now with, say, all of the tech players in this space, all the levels of automation. And if you're still very traditional in terms of how you approach, say, a CFO role, in terms of just being the head of finance, yeah, it's hard to compete it.
I mean, you've led me beautifully into my last question, so thank you for that, which is automation as a theme, right? And I see it as a focus area at Iridium. When I looked on your website, it does come up quite a bit. I suppose just understanding what it means in practice, you know, can you give some examples of how a company brings in automation and what that actually does? And then dare I say it, words like big data. I'm not going to ask you about artificial intelligence unless you want to go there, because I'm a little bit tired of that buzzword, but I mean, it is an important one. But there's all these buzzwords, right? In real life, what does this actually look like for a client?
Yeah, I mean, looking at automation really at its kind of, well, at the simplest form is, if there's a person doing a manual process in Excel or Sheets, which does not make sense, there's a software piece that can automate that process. So automation is usually built up from like bottom up with, say, getting your financial processes. Say, let's talk around finance, for instance. Getting kind of financial processes locked down using tools that can handle volumes better than an individual can. So if you find like a manual task, for instance, capturing bank statement lines, I hope this does not happen in the industry anymore, but you always can be surprised. You know, there's so many tools which now you should be importing bank lined items directly from the bank. Same with kind of supplier documents. If you're not using an OCR tool to capture information from supplier documents and converting it into your accounting software, you know, that's automation. You shouldn't be manually capturing supplier documents back into your accounting software. So automation works really well when you understand your processes and your procedures and where there are constraints in terms of people just doing the same thing over and over again. And there's a number of tools in the market just to automate that space. When you've got that base automated, then you know you can deliver faster results, and then you can look at other areas. So for instance, another area where we do a lot of automation and advisory is group consolidated reporting. So our friends at Sift Analytics have built up some incredible good software for reporting purposes. We've done a lot of conversions of sheets with, you know, 50 tabs of various different manipulations of data to try and get out just a simple profit and loss across a number of countries in various different, well, not a group in various different countries. But, you know, Sift Analytics makes it easy to be able to just build out the framework, build out all the structures. And it happens automatically then month to month once the accounts are closed out. So there's definitely different levels of automation. I think, you know, a lot of our clients, we focus more on the SME space. So where big data is involved, it's not really in the finance side. It's either on their service side. So big data is what they're offering as a, you know, as a solution in terms of what their tech product is or whatever they're building. And we're not very much involved in assisting in that side. For the most part, the finances are not highly voluminous in terms of, yeah, there's not a lot of data we're dealing with relative to bigger data sets. But yeah, that's definitely, I think, in terms of where Iridium plays a part, is looking at those financial procedures, automating it, reducing all those manual tasks, and then being able to deliver more real-time, faster data month to month. And making sure then we focus more on the side of, say, the review, and making sure that the accounting principles that you're taught when you're, you know, you do your articles and you're a chartered accountant, they're still in play. And, you know, sense checking that the system's actually delivering and doing what it should be doing, essentially.
Yeah, I think it talks to scale again. And that's actually where I want to just finish off is, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a founder, as you scale your business, the reality is when people are doing jobs they shouldn't be doing, not only are you paying too much in all likelihood, but you're also making it harder and harder and harder for the business to move beyond the current people. So I think that's maybe an important key takeout at the end of all of this, kind of tying in everything we've spoken about, is tech is a wonderful enabler of scale, actually. That doesn't mean you have to be a tech business to scale. This is not a venture capital podcast. It means you need to use technology to help you scale. And I think that applies to basically any industry. So I think, Shay, I'm happy to leave it there unless you have any final comments of a bit of advice for founders listening to this.
Yeah, I fully agree with your last comment. I think a good practice is, you know, if you're a CEO of a business, take a look at what you actually spend your time on. If you're spending your time still doing a lot of like manual stuff that can be, you know, delegated or solved by a solution, do so, so you can focus more on strategy and understanding where you're taking the business.
Absolutely. Shay, thank you so much for your time. In order for people to find you, so just because it's not obvious how you spell your name, it's C-H-A-Y. So if anyone wants to find you, I imagine you're on LinkedIn as Shay Stockdale, C-H-A-Y Stockdale. Is that the best place to connect with you?
Yeah, best place to connect on LinkedIn, and our site is Iridium Business Solutions.
Fantastic. Shay, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your insights for our audience. I really appreciate it, and all the best